Hello and welcome to another soul-crushing episode of Dave Wright's podcast. I'm your host, Dave Wright. Each week here, I like to share one of my short stories and then the next chapter from an ongoing novel of mine called Soul. As usual, if you would like to know more about this week's story, then stick around at the end. For now, let's get into it. This week's episode, the penultimate of season one, is called Choosing to Wake. The cool night air felt refreshing on my skin. I could almost convince myself that the grip of painkillers I had downed might do the trick this time. I threw the two empty sports drinks into the bin along with the mostly full packet of painkillers. Couldn't let Celia find the evidence of my nightly ritual. She would just make a fuss and force me to go see more specialists. Having spent over a year being scanned, prodded, bloodlet, and yet still I felt constantly dehydrated with a low-grade headache, I had called it. I lied and said I felt better. I know she doesn't really believe me. Opening the little gate into our front yard, I quietly unlocked the front door, head still throbbing and fighting the urge to swallow for relief on my sandpaper-like throat. I had gotten very good at ignoring it. What else could I do? There was a flickering glow coming from the front room, and I could smell candles and what was probably the leftover charcuterie. It was our date night, and I was late. A major issue had gone wrong with the client rollout, and I had to be there to put out the fires and smooth over the higher-ups' panic. I put my bag down quietly by the door and headed to the warm glow. I found Celia still awake, lying on the couch, struggling to keep her eyes open. "Oh, honey, I'm sorry I'm so late," I said as her eyes met mine. My heart leapt as they did. She could still get a schoolboy reaction out of me, 2 kids and 15 years of marriage later. Celia stretched and yawned, feline-like. I kissed her in greeting, then sat down next to her, stroking her hair quietly as she snuggled her head into my lap.
Did you get everything sorted?
She mumbled, mostly asleep. Yeah. I managed around the remnants of food that I was not so gracefully shoveling into my face. It had been a long, hungry day. I swear I almost heard her purr gently as I kept stroking her head with one hand. Finally, she shook herself and sat upright.
"I have a bottle of that chili wine that we both agree is terrible."
Almost laughing, I saw that it was half gone. For some reason, we kept buying this awful wine. As I filled my own glass, I asked how her day had gone.
"Alright, the kids had art school today. One of the teachers caught me as I was picking them up."
I heard the distaste in her voice and threw a puzzled look to continue.
"Oh, it was about Paul's art piece. It was a man made of guns, shooting a gun. All the bullets were also guns."
I did laugh then. He was a young boy. I remember what I was like back then, even though my memories are usually hazy at best. "Yeah, I used to draw guns back then too. It was either guns, dinosaurs, or dicks." My throat reminded me it was still sore while I talked, but I ignored it. It was a constant companion. Celia laughed with me, then continued.
"Also, if Gracie asks you to guess what her piece was about, good luck. All I know, it's not a fairy."
Celia shook her head.
"Little Miss got very upset that I couldn't understand her genius."
"Noted," I agreed. We were incredibly lucky that I earned enough that Celia could follow her passion and looked after the kids. We had built the family we had both dreamed about. Celia finished up her wine and gave me a very particular look.
"I'm going to have a shower and head to bed. Maybe you won't be late this time."
I watched her walk towards the bathroom until she was out of sight. I know she usually takes about 20 minutes in there. As soon as I heard the door close behind her, I got up and opened my bag. I returned to the couch with a sheet of papers I had printed earlier today. My head was really starting to throb now. It's not as if I was cheating on her. I was just not telling the love of my life, the mother to our children, everything. Very different. I was protecting her, in a way. These were the lies I told myself to keep digging. They had become all the more important in the last month.
Moving the charcuterie board out of the way allowed me to spread the papers out in front of me. They were filled with jargon and diagrams, notes and scary words like bed sores, enforced airflow, and unresponsive. I found the page that had given me such chills. I spent months working on this in secret. It had started purely because I was sick of paying money to be told again and again we have no idea, in more and more elaborate and expensive ways. So I started doing what I'm good at, collecting and collating data. I didn't have a lot to go in on the positives. Dehydration, the constant headache, the occasional invisible burning pain on my ass that moved around, a prickling feeling on the inside of my wrists. Some nights I would wake up almost choking for no reason. Not real symptoms. What I did build, though, was an incredibly long list of what it could not be. I needed to find something that didn't exist on that list. The page in front of me swam back into focus as I heard faint music start from the bathroom. It was a simple enough page. It had a crude drawing of a man from the front and back. The man-like drawing had marks at his wrists to administer fluids and antibiotics. A tube down his throat. Delivery of nutrients, otherwise the patient's body will consume itself. My mind rebelled. I tried to stop reading, but I had been chasing this for too long. I had to keep going. I knew I was close. The nightmare continued. At night times, intubation or forced airflow might be required, as the lungs can be atrophied and cannot provide enough oxygen without aid. I kept reading. I had to. Constant movement of the patient is of utmost importance to avoid pressure sores and to keep skin integrity. I don't know how long I sat there. The shutting off of the shower brought me back. Scrabbling around to collect the papers, I shoved them back in my bag, my mind shut down and yet screaming at the same time. The door to the bathroom opened and closed, followed by the bedroom door. Moving like I'd forgotten how to walk, I made it to the cracked open door of our children's room. Our children, Paul and Gracie, our treasures. I looked in at their sleeping forms and could see a piece of paper by Gracie's head that had to be her art she was so proud of. She had wanted to stay up to show me. I couldn't stand there. I closed the door quietly and turned towards our bedroom, where my wife, my love, was waiting for me. The words printed at the top of the page came roaring back into my mind. Persistent vegetative state. My hand trembled as it reached for our bedroom door. That was Choosing to Wake. I did promise we were going back to Sad Town. The core of the idea came from a period of my life where I used to get horrific migraines every month or two. I could always feel them coming on, and there was nothing I could do about it. I would take a grip of painkillers, like 5 ibuprofen and 5 paracetamol, and just try to ride it out. I now know how insane that is, but at the time, it was the unknown that was driving me crazy. I could feel it coming on, and there didn't seem to be anything that caused it, they just happened. While I had them, the pain was incredible. I couldn't do anything. If I tried to lie down to rest, it felt like the pain was liquid metal in my brain, dripping from one side to the other. I went to doctors, got an MRI done, no one could figure it out. I remember one particular event that left me convinced for months that it was a brain tumor. I could feel one of the migraines coming on, grimly accepting to strap in and ride it out, and I was sitting at my desk and suddenly all the tension was gone and I felt so much better. Then I realized my front was wet and I had blood pouring out of my nose. So yeah, brain tumor. It took a long time to finally figure out what was causing them. There are a lot of factors as to why I didn't put it all together much earlier and would mostly sound like I was throwing myself a pity party. The cause of the migraines was a combination of my work, hobbies, and glasses. I'd been wearing the same pair of glasses for years and my right eye is a sack of crap. My work was in IT for a very long time, so I'd spend all day staring at a screen, and then I'd come home and spend hours more staring at the fun screen. The muscles in my right eye would be wound tighter and tighter until the pain would blossom in my head as a wonderful bouquet. Bringing it all back, that is what started the first idea for this guy, of being driven crazy by the unknown pain and unknown symptoms that no one could solve. I remember in the depths of my migraines, sometimes the crazy thought would float through my pain-addled mind that maybe I was experiencing this pain due to being in a coma somewhere. It sounds weird, but you have to remember, I was driven so crazy by this unknown and unstoppable pain that at times I was fantasizing about taking a drill to the side of my head, you know, pie style. For writing this, I did a bunch of research into what patients in that kind of permanent coma state would go through. The pains in the wrists, the forced airway, the bed sores, as usual trying to keep it as correct as I could. While writing it, I was reminded of the book Better Than Life by Doug Naylor and Rob Grant. They're the guys who wrote Red Dwarf. There was an episode based on the book, but the book's much better. In it, they are part of a full immersion video game called Better Than Life, where electrodes burrow into your frontal lobe and hypothalamus to give you the exact life you want deep down. What sets the book apart from the episode is in the book, they don't know they're in this immersion. They think they're in reality. That's what made it so insidious and scary to me. This whole story took a few swings to get it where I was happy with it, so there are a lot of little bits and pieces here that I like. The charcuterie board is there because for most of my life, I'd mispronounced it, and now just the word makes me laugh. I used to call it chaucerie for some reason. And the chili wine, that came from one of my friend's dad a long time ago. He offered all of us teenage boys some chili wine so he could get rid of it, and I so wanted to appear cultured and mature, I was all over it, when in reality, I couldn't stand it. As for Celia, that's the name of the first girl I ever kissed, back in primary school. This was another short story where I didn't want to resolve it myself, leaving it open as to what was going to happen when he opened the door to the bedroom. What choice was he going to make? I wanted to leave that to the reader, as most people would have an immediate gut reaction, but hopefully think about it a bit more and then go, oh, this sucks. Is a known dream paradise better than an unknown reality? Does it matter? Well, that's all for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to reach out to me. As for next week, that'll be the final episode of season 1, so I want to end it with a fun story. Don't forget, I have a Patreon up if you want to throw some support my way. You can find the details on my website, davewrights.com. That's Dave, WRIGHTS.com. Hopefully I'll see you all next week. Take care.